Welcome to Canadian Politique Live. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
I'm Mike McDougall.
Today on the show, we're taking your questions, and what a day to do it. The entire world is melting down. The stock market is crashing. Donald Trump is shutting down the government for his stupid border wall. James Mattis, the Secretary of Defense, resigned. We've got anger in the prairies over a pipeline that the Liberals already bought them, but apparently that's not good enough. And yeah, so why don't we just ignore what's going on and jump right in? Welcome, Mike and Leanne, for our last show of 2018. This is number 30.
Number 30.
That's right. That's pretty good. And that doesn't include our other episodes where it's just one-on-one interviews. So there you go.
Yeah, I wasn't part of that, so they don't count.
Yeah, so I guess then you're what? Well, this is still number 30. No, it's probably like number 25 for
number
each
29
year.
For Mike.
29. No, like 27, 26 or 27.
Right.
A good number.
That's
good number.
All right. The ratio's pretty good.
We're going to jump in because we want to keep this nice and tight so everybody can keep get back to work, get to their Christmas shopping, do all that kind of good stuff. So we asked for your questions, and surprisingly, you actually answered them or actually answered the call. So we've got a couple here that we're going to go through. We haven't taken all of them, but we're going to start with questions, do that, and then we're going to do our predictions for 2019. So let's do a first one, and it's coming to us from Nanaimo, British Columbia. And the question is, what is Justin Trudeau's path to securing another majority? Is it even possible? I'm dubious that the federal Liberals can win a seat in Alberta or Saskatchewan or even my home province of BC. Leanne or Mike, you want to take this one first?
Do it, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Ask me 2 months ago, I would have said it was going to be an easy cruise to a majority government because I think that Andrew Scheer just does not have any, does not ooze any leadership qualities at all.
He oozes something.
And Jagmeet Singh, I've said before, is an empty suit, and I'm so disappointed in what he has become because I had such high hopes for him. Now, though, I think that even though, and I mean, on this pod, we've talked about it a lot, about the erroneous assumptions that the West has towards what Trudeau has done with regards to the oil sands of the pipeline, it's getting out of control right now. I mean, he hasn't done a great job of putting a lid on it, especially since the facts are on his side. So I tend to agree with you, Cam. I think that I think he'll win, but it'll be a minority government.
Okay, I didn't say it was going to be a minority because I haven't done mine yet. So go for it, Leon.
I think it'll be a minority because I think the kind listener is right. It'd be hard for him to get a lot of seats in Alberta or BC or Saskatchewan. As long as he stays strong in the Maritimes, which he likely will, Quebec and Ontario, I think he'll probably get a minority. But it's hard to even understand what, you know, we've talked about it 100 times. Why is Alberta upset when he just bought the pipeline? I'm not really sure. I don't understand. But I do think he's going to suffer for that. I also think, though, you know, campaigns are very unpredictable things. And if Andrew Scheer reveals himself to be a complete buffoon on the campaign trail, which is possible, everything could change. So it's kind of hard to predict.
Yeah, so my thinking is fairly aligned. I still think this could be like a 1997 where the Liberals got a very narrow majority government and they were wiped out in Atlantic Canada. I don't think that's going to be the case this time. I think they're going to hold plus or minus, you know, 2 or 3 seats in Atlantic Canada unless the bottom completely falls out. So they'll hold, let's say they hold 28 seats out of, I think it's 32 that are out there in Atlantic Canada. Then they move into Quebec. They're going to hopefully grow their Quebec base there. I mean, I think they're over 40 MPs right now. So, all roads to majority go through Quebec and Ontario. And Ontario traditionally likes to have a very, they don't like to elect the same government, a Liberal and a Liberal government at the provincial level or a Conservative and a Conservative government at the provincial level. They like to have divided government. It was a little bit, you know, it turned things on its head a little bit when when the Liberals were in power for 15 years in Ontario. But, you know, yeah, it coincided as well with 7 years of, sorry, I guess 5 years of Conservative rule federally. So they do tend to like their divided government. I think that Premier Ford is making it very easy right now for the Liberals to steal a few seats. I think it becomes a lot dicier as soon as you move into Manitoba. The Liberals will probably like lose a few seats there. Maybe not all of them. I can see them maybe keeping Jim Carr's seat. That's traditionally, it was held by Lloyd Axworthy for a number of years in the 90s. That's Winnipeg South, if I'm not mistaken. And I imagine that would stay in their column, maybe one or two others. And then Goodale, they've only got one seat in Saskatchewan. So I imagine even in 2011, when the Liberals were obliterated, they'll probably hold Goodale's as they did then. They'll be wiped out, I think, in Alberta. There's no way, even though they're doing literally everything they can, including giving a $1.6 billion in support to the oil sector. Apparently, that's still not good enough. They're going to be wiped out there. And I do think our questioner from Nanaimo, I do think that the Liberals will not be wiped out in BC again. Even in 2011, when the Liberals were wiped out nationally down to 30 something seats, they still managed to hold two in BC. I don't think it's as dire there, and I think the NDP is likely going to be weak. So I'm going to say either a good minority or a very, very slim majority. So that's our opinion. That is political analysis 101. All right. Next question. All right.
When do we get to the one that's going to make me laugh?
Well, that's a good one. I'll save it for the end. Okay. What policy idea is not being talked about right now on the Canadian left, center left axis, on the Canadian left or center left axis that you want to see talked about more by progressive politicians in 2019? I ask you, Leanne Goodman.
Affordable housing. I don't think that gets enough attention. There's a whole generation of millennials, you know, 35 and under, who don't ever have a hope in hell of ever getting into the real estate market in some of the most important economic hubs in Canada. So it's going to get harder to attract people to work in places like Toronto and Vancouver if we don't get on top of it. And I know it's one of the things that are on their list of priorities that you just, like, you never hear it talked about, right?
But what do you mean when you say
affordable housing?
When you say affordable housing, can somebody tell me if, when you talk about affordable housing, are you talking about subsidized housing or legitimately?
Yeah, I'm talking when you're building, like in Toronto, where they're building a billion new condo units every day, the portion of those units need to be earmarked as subsidized housing. Like, there needs to be rent limits and rent control.
I would just like to see, I think that's a great idea, but my thing is I feel like sometimes we talk about affordable housing and we forget the people that actually have the wherewithal to get into the market if things were not priced out. Like, if our foreign buyers weren't, you know, coming in, driving up the price of real estate and leaving people that maybe have a solid down payment and can afford a $250,000 house left, you know, trying to find one that's $600,000 that they don't have the wherewithal to pay for. So I think it's like a balance. You know, when I talk about affordable housing,
No, there's a combination of things where you have to make changes to ownership laws. We saw that worked a bit in BC. That's part of the piece. But I also think, I'm watching in Toronto all these new condos going up with absolutely no requirement by the developer to make sure that some of those units are priced appropriately, right?
Yeah. Mike?
I would agree with the affordable housing, but that's more of a Toronto thing. I mean, I know people that are renting in Toronto now. I also live here. Rent is out of control. But when condos are selling for $500,000 a pop, if you're charging rent on a mortgage for that condo, you need to charge at least $2,500 a month just to make your mortgage payments. Plus, there's maintenance fees on top of that. And I own, I actually got into the market earlier, and I have maintenance fees that go up every month. I would have to charge, you know, a pretty good price just to break even on my place if I were to rent it. So it's a tough one. I think that one of the things that at a federal level that's not talked a lot about, it, I mean, it's talked a lot about at the provincial level, which is, you know, education and providing training for, you know, you have the GM plant closing down. Yeah. We need to have training options for these workers. We need to retrain our workforce, because with disruptive innovations that are happening in the economy, there's a lot of there's a lot of people that, you know, if you're 65 and your job becomes obsolete, I'm not saying that's okay, but that's manageable. But if you're 40 and your job becomes obsolete, you need to be retrained. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the provinces are talking a lot about education, but I don't feel like the feds are. They're talking about immigration because that's what Andrew Scheer wants to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Yeah. Get off the topic. Stop making him the one that dictates the policy discussions for the day. Yeah, exactly.
We're just playing defense, right? So that's what I would say. I would say education, housing's important. I mean, domestic issues is what we should be running on. But right now we're looking at, you know, copycatting the states, talking about immigrants. We're talking about trips to India.
Yeah.
Like, let's get on the offense here. Let's pull it around and talk about what people need, which is training. They need a place to live. You know, there's a lot of things that progressives can do to help out. And I think that our message is better than the conservative message, but it's not the loudest right now.
No. And you know what the thing is, you know, a lesson from the states, if I'm a progressive up in Canada, a lesson from the states is that the Republicans don't give a shit down there. If they play to their base and if media starts calling them out, they just double down and do it. Whereas here in Canada, we play to, I don't know what the fuck we're playing for half the time. We ignore the issues that really matter to the progressives, and then we expect them to turn out to vote. And it's kind of like, are you kidding me? Play to the base. Play to what people want. So Mike and Leanne, good ones. I would also add to it basic income. I really, really believe that we need a basic income plan for Canada and Canadians, as well as full-scale tax reform. I still don't think the wealthiest among us are paying what they should be paying, although I give credit to the Prime Minister for making sure that, you know, they've ticked up a couple notches on percentage. But to me, basic income is a million times better than having to do means testing for everything from welfare to other benefits, whether it's child or other. So I would like to see us really, you know, in the 2019 budget going into this election, let's launch a basic income plan. Imagine if everybody could have $30,000 a year in their pocket. I mean, how much more would that do to reduce incidence of poverty? Make sure that the economy is going, because people with money will spend it. Not that that makes a fancy living, but it certainly is a hell of a lot better than going to a food bank at Christmas time or begging or not being able to afford the necessities of life. So basic income is my call.
And Trudeau Trudeau rolled out that possibility the other day. Did you know? There's now talking in Ottawa. The government is now talking about looking at a guaranteed basic income project. So that's good.
Yeah. And you know what? Don't let the conservatives or people who don't understand what this could mean to families across the country dictate that this is just free money for lazy bastards, because that's what they will do. I mean, the traditional conservative mantra is to always shit on people who are down on their luck or maybe just haven't had the good fortunes that other people have. I mean, we can't all be a failed insurance salesman like Andrew Scheer or a failed former waiter like Andrew Scheer and just continue to fail upwards into some of the highest offices of the land. We can't do it, folks. So some of us need basic income.
If I can point out, when you call them a failed insurance salesman, they're just going to respond with yoga instructors. So it's probably something that we don't need to really go there.
Yoga instructor, French teacher, drama teacher, math teacher. I'll put those up any day. And how ironic is it, by the way, as we approach the 2019 election, that Trudeau will be the most experienced leader on the stage when it comes to running the system of government. How times have changed in 4 years. Okay. Another question here is, which cabinet minister do you feel has done the best job in 2018, rather?
To me, that's a slam dunk. Chrystia Freeland.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
She dealt with those, dickheads in the U.S. on the U.S. negotiating team.
Trump didn't like her.
No, Trump didn't like her, but apparently the other guy, the chief negotiator, Lighthizer, did like her in the end. Thought she was tough and fair, that would have been a terrible situation had they not got that deal, and she was steadfast, and she managed not to completely shit on him in public, as she must have wanted to do. So she's proven to be really capable, get things done cabinet minister. I'm so proud that it's a woman.
Yep.
And I kind of love her now. I wasn't sure I loved her heading into it. I actually wondered if she would be the one, because I'd heard stories about people who had worked with her in Ontario who, you heard sort of the odd story about how she was a ball buster and was hard to work for. excuse me, I have a cold. And so I feared that she might be the one that scandal first hit. Like maybe she had reamed out some staffer and it would all come out. But I've been pleasantly surprised and she's been fantastic.
Mike is shuffling papers in case anybody's wondering if the studio is burning.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't realize I was getting picked up.
It's okay. I just didn't want anybody to think that there was like some pyromaniac here in the studio. I am on camera. There are no flames. Yeah. No flames.
My bad.
Okay, Mike, over to you. Who's the best cabinet minister 2018?
It's Freeland. Of course it is, right? I mean, Leanne put out all the points, but I do have a soft spot for Phil Potts because she's fantastic. So,
So you stole mine because it was going to be Phil Potts. Phil Potts is quietly and amazingly competent. That's why you put her into the roles that she's in. If you look at what she's being done, doing for Indigenous Services, I agree. I think it's Chrystia Freeland because of what she's done. But, you know, Jane Philpott deserves a huge honorable mention. She has delivered a lot of, on the Indigenous Services file, she's done a lot, including on clean water, ending boil water advisories in a number of different reserves across the country. She's turned over or is in the process of turning over things like social services for First Nations, Inuit, and Métis, so Indigenous peoples. And she's just quietly competent. She just gets on with it. She doesn't fuck around. You don't see her taking selfies of herself or posting like cute videos about, you know, opining about whether or not it's the sky is blue and it's wet outside. No, she just gets on with it. She's got good staff, a good team behind her. And, you know, I'd love to see in a perfect world for me, I'd love to see Chrystia Freeland or Jane Philpott as deputy PM with a lot more public face, because frankly, both of those communicators need to be front and center in 2019. If they're going to win any sort of mandate again from Canadians, put your best foot forward. And fortunately for this government, the best feet that they've got are very competent women in the positions of Philpott and Freeland. So less Morneau, more Philpott, more Chrystia. And
I would say too, Freeland rose to an occasion, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. But Philpott is just consistently impressive.
Yes.
And I think that's kind of how I would put it.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Biggest disappointment in cabinet in 2018?
Oh, God. I don't even know how to answer that one.
I will. I'll jump.
You go first, Mike.
No, I'll go first. Morneau.
Yeah, like him.
Yes.
It's Morneau. Morneau, first of all, we have never had a female cabinet minister in the female finance minister in Canada. And I would certainly like to see what they could do in this position. This guy has a political tenure. I am a huge champion of people succeeding, obviously. And he has worked so hard, you know, in terms of building, building above what his family did with Morneau Chappelle. But this guy, he is the least sympathetic person going into potentially rough economic times that you want to see. A silver spooned millionaire talking to oil sector workers about how they feel their pain. It just doesn't work. It really just doesn't. And time and again with this finance minister, he's fumbled the message. He looks kind of off his mark. So I would say it's Morneau. And I don't take any great pleasure saying that, but I do sometimes wonder if he wouldn't be a better fit for something like, you know, industry or international trade or something like that, because I just don't think that the sensitivities right now and this kind of populist, you know, burbling that we're having across the country, I don't think it lends itself to a cabinet minister that, for right or for wrong, just doesn't seem to have the communication skills that are needed for this role. And frankly, the kind of that compassionate side, and I'm not casting aspersions on him. So please, you know, if you're Morneau's people and you're hearing this, that is not what I'm doing. I just think that his talents are probably better utilized somewhere else. And it would be better to have a more effective communicator in that role going forward.
Yeah. He's been a big disappointment, right? He was considered a bit of a star and he really hasn't been a star at all.
Yeah. So great MP for Toronto Centre. And as I say, a good minister, it just needs to be in a different role. Mike, what about you?
I'm going to go. So this is with all due respect. This isn't even a minister, but with all due respect, and I think my views are well known if you listen to this pod, but the biggest disappointment for me this year, honestly, is kind of Justin Trudeau. Oof. I think that Justin Trudeau
going for the big one, eh?
Listen, man, this is like, you're going against Scheer and Singh. Take it. And like, take it, right? This is low level, low hanging fruit. Just freaking take it. But it's starting to slip away, and there's no reason that it should. Like, this is a weak field. Just fucking take it, Trudeau. But that's it.
Hey.
Also, you know, that poor natural resources minister, Amarjeet Sohi, you know, he's been dealt a shitty card and hasn't looked so great on it all the time, right? Apparently, he received the lowest approval rating of some Angus Reid Institute poll about who is doing the worst.
I would challenge the average Canadian to actually pick him out of a lineup of cabinet ministers. I guarantee you they couldn't do it. Most Canadians couldn't find their way out of a wet paper bag when it comes to politics, with due respect.
And he's
to wet
just, paper Canadian, bag. He's just being,
Canadian politics, yeah.
Right. Well, and he's also, you know, he's been dealt a shitty hand. He's got the pipeline file, so it's gonna be difficult to look good on that file.
All right, so anyway, now we'll get into two more questions. One, here, this, Leanne, is for you. I know Leanne eats while she's on the show. First of all, the I don't give a fuckness of that is pretty hot. But second, what's she eating when she does that? Like a snack or a full-on entree?
Oh, how kind of you to ask. Usually it's popcorn. I usually have like a pot of popcorn.
It's like the loudest food
on my oven. Yes, it's always sitting in a pot on my oven, and I just sort of snack on it during the day. And well, there's been some times where it's been lunch hour, and I haven't had time to eat, and the podcast is dragging on, and I'm starting to feel faint from the hunger, so I just nibble at a bit of dry popcorn. Very healthy.
No butter,
by the way.
No butter.
No butter. If you pop it in something like grapeseed oil,
yes,
one of the heart smart oils, and sea salt, it's a very healthy snack. I highly recommend it.
Well, see?
That's hipster stuff, man. Give me full lard buttered popcorn from the movie theater any day.
Except that's not real butter.
Well, let me tell
that's
you.
Like
if
basically
I pay the extra
for the butter.
Yeah, I don't like for the real butter, yeah. If I start doing that, I'm going to want that every day, so I don't. But if you put rosemary sprigs in the oil and you let it steep for a few hours before you pop the popcorn, and then your popcorn has a rosemary-infused deliciousness, it's quite tasty.
For a few hours, popcorn at home is a minute and 30 seconds in the microwave by Costco popcorn.
No, don't eat that stuff. That's how you do it. It's like it makes that's it's going to make you infertile. It has palm oil in it.
I do not plan on giving birth, so...
Well, and Mike has a kid, so clearly that's working.
Yeah,
but who the hell has few hours to let stuff steep with rosemary sprigs?
You put it in the morning. You put the oil in the pot in the morning, and you put the rosemary sprigs. And you turn it on low.
Just leave oil on the stove all day.
you turn it on low, and you just let it sit there for a few hours, and then you pop the popcorn.
Okay.
Well, see,
anyway,
you
delicious.
Got a fulsome answer and also a cooking lesson. So, you know, mm-hmm. we do everything here. If we had a sponsor, looking at you, Pepsi, I'm drinking Pepsi today. if we had a sponsor, maybe we could actually send out commemorative bags of rosemary infused popcorn by Leanne. But that'll have to wait till 2019, maybe. Okay, last question. This one is name a change, you know, a tax policy change that you'd like to see in 2019.
We use this one,
yeah. I can tell you right now. Yeah, go for it.
Okay, my answer to this is I don't have any fucking idea. This is a podcast. What are you asking questions about tax changes?
Okay, well,
I got one.
All right.
There needs to be a carbon tax, and then I'm, you know, tax the shit out of those fuckers. Even if you tax them low, you can still bring in enough revenues that you could actually mail every Canadian household a check every year. And if you go medium or high in terms of how much you're charging per carbon ton or whatever that measurement is, and don't attack me, I'm just a bit under the weather. If you go high, you can be sending people as much as $500 a year, and tell me that the population can get behind fighting climate change if they were getting a check in the mail every year. And it's easy to do. Even the oil and gas sector is not opposed to a carbon tax, so let's do it.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. But I would like to see something a little bit better for medical cannabis patients, and that is stop taxing medical cannabis. right now in Canada, we tax medical cannabis. So people have, first of all, we don't have coverage. So people actually have to pay for medical cannabis themselves. It's not covered on provincial or federal formularies. Most Canadians, of course, would have private coverage. That is not always uniform in terms of medical cannabis coverage, although it's getting better. But irrespective, when a Canadian goes to, you know, goes to their doctor, gets an authorization, signs up with a licensed producer, they have to pay out of pocket. And then the federal government brought in the excise tax on top of that. So Canadians are paying even more. Now, put this into perspective. We're in the middle of an opioid crisis. Do Canadians have to pay taxes on their opioids? Nope, because all prescription drugs that are used for medical purposes are basically zero rated, exempt from taxation. So that would be a change, an easy change that the government could make to help medical cannabis patients, of which there are about 300,000, give or take. I think it's more give. I think it's about 350 maybe, medical cannabis patients in Canada. That would be a huge help going into an election. And if you're a parent whose son or daughter suffers from epileptic seizures, and you're paying out of pocket for that medicine anyway, how about giving them a solid, because they've got enough shit going on in their life, from a health perspective. It'd just be really nice, for the federal government and their budget going into this election to acknowledge that there's a lot of people that are suffering out there, from a medical perspective, that could use some serious assistance from the government. So that would be mine. All right. I'm looking at the time here because I know we got to keep this tight. Mike and Leanne, predictions
keeping
for
it tight.
Keeping it tight. That's what he's.
Oh, I got some predictions.
Okay. All right. Then you get to start. Predictions for 2019, Leanne.
Do I get to start? I feel it's unfair. Okay. I don't believe Trump is going to be president in a year. I think he's done. I think this Mattis stuff is the final nail in the coffin.
Isn't that fucking terrifying?
Against him. Yeah, he's done. And he won't be around in a year. He'll either quit or he'll be charged with something, or he'll have been impeached and go out fighting. But whatever it is, he's done. I hope. I don't know what's going to happen in the election. I want to think that Trudeau could pull out another majority, but I think it'll be more likely be a minority. And my final prediction is that I think Trump, as he's going down, is going to wet his pants in public, and we're going to see his diaper overflow, and he will be subjected to a lifetime of humiliation and mocking and jeers, and the picture of him wetting his pants in public at a news conference or something will become a historical and iconic photograph.
No,
those are my predictions.
That's lovely. You, Mike?
Diaper's going to leak.
Good.
Minority liberal government and constitutional crisis in America.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yep. I'm going to say narrow majority government or very large minority government. And maybe we get some NDP crossovers or a coalition with the Greens if they manage to get a couple more seats. But I still think it's going to be a liberal government. In Alberta, I'm going out on a real limb here, Rachel Notley. So do not let me down. I think Rachel Notley, I think the campaign is going to matter. I think I don't really give a shit right now that Jason Kenney is 25 points ahead. That guy is arrogant as all get out, folks. I mean, I've seen him. I've met him. He's an arrogant little puss. And Rachel Notley showed what arrogance can do in the last campaign when Jim Prentice told her that math was hard and that Albertans should look in the mirror if they were looking for somebody to blame, and she rode that to victory. And I believe this time she could do the same. She's personally very, very popular. So I'm going to say that she wins re-election. It's not going to be a big majority. I could see it being a very, like a minority government with maybe the Liberals and the Alberta Party propping her up. But I think there's enough wing nuts in the UCP that could derail, and combined with Kenny on the stump. He is not a likable guy. Rachel Notley is. Her personal popularity ratings are very, very good. The political ones
bold
from her party.
And ballsy prediction it, from you, Mr.
Yes.
Bishop. I think she's done, but anyway.
She probably, you know, she probably is, but I'm going out on a limb because I remember laughing in 2015 when she ran, and she started her campaign and she had her little minivan, and she was standing by the minivan at a press conference, and she said, "My name is Rachel Notley, and I'm running to be your premier." And I remember thinking to myself, why even bother? Like, what a waste of time.
I know.
And then she went from four seats to a majority government. Anything can happen in politics. Yeah. And lastly...
And she's very personally magnetic, right?
Like, she is.
Here in the House. Like, she's super smart. I really like her, but I just think the tides have turned against her. Anyway, go on. I interrupted you. Sorry.
And my last one would be that... So I don't want to talk about Trump because I'm so sick and tired of that fucking guy. I think everybody is. But my last one, I'm going to jump overseas and I'm going to say two predictions. One, I think that there will be another referendum for Brexit. I think that that is going to come sooner than later. I could be completely wrong, but I do think that the individuals who want to redo, they should get it. And I think they might, but probably will. And then I also think on a happy note that... Meghan and Harry are going to have a baby girl. So, see?
Who
see?
Cares?
but I would also say that here's a prediction. I will still love...
She's cupping her belly. Sorry, go on.
My other prediction is I will still love President George W. Bush.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And really defend what it was, an epically excellent presidency. Oh.
Go, right. Okay, goodbye.
I'm kidding. Yeah, all right, no. So that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, really. My prediction is that you're going to be put into a mental institution by Mike and I. Mike and I are going to drive you there over your George W. Bush derangement.
But wouldn't you rather have him right now? Come on. Come on.
Well, yeah,
well,
but I mean,
sure. I'd rather have the guy who scrubs the toilets at the Walmart than Donald Trump, right? I'd rather have a lot of people rather than Donald Trump. But, you know, we've said this 100 times. You've got a problem. Okay. Have a happy holiday, everybody. A Merry Christmas and a happy Kwanzaa or whatever it is you celebrate.
And
thank you for listening to our podcast.
Leanne, I have a question. Do you feel better? Do you feel safer now saying Merry Christmas? I mean, we can say it again because of Donald Trump.
Oh, yeah.
Mike, anything you want to say?
Terrible war on Christmas. It's hurt me so terribly.
I know. Look out for the missiles. Merry Christmas, everybody. See you in January.
Bye.
Bye, guys.